I'm going to speak to Professor Corin, who's a professor of cybersecurity at Ulster University. Great to have you back on the show, Professor. How are you getting on?
Good, Greg. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. Right. So we're being told that people in border areas could be affected by the new UK emergency alert system this Sunday, obviously because the cross-border people with Northern Irish phones and what have you. So what is actually happening on Sunday, Kevin?
Yeah, on Sunday at 3 o'clock, everyone with a 4G and a 5G phone in the UK will receive an emergency alert from the government. Okay, so it'll be, in comes a warning with a loud siren-like sound or vibration lasting about 10 seconds, and then up on screen will come, of course, in this case, saying this is a test of emergency alerts, a new government service in a real emergency, follow the instructions, visit gov.uk for more information. This is a test, you do not need to take any more action.
It sounds very apocalyptic, but presumably it's in case there's floods in Surrey or something and they can target that particular area, or is it in a doomsday scenario like we might see in some Hollywood film, you have been selected?
Well, in some ways it is being repurposed because of the Ukraine war and the state of the world at the moment. But no, this has been in existence in countries like Canada, the Netherlands, Japan. And it is, of course, there for severe flooding or, you know, emergency alerts for things, again, to do with generally to do with the weather or whatever else. But it could, of course, be repurposed for incoming missiles now, or whatever else. So, again, it has been used by governments around and they've tested it. And, you know, I mean, there is suspicion, of course, about any service like this. But it really is just the cell towers beaming out to all the phones connected. So even if you are roaming, you will get the message again. But in this case.
Yeah, and of course, then you will have a group of people saying, I'm not signing up for this. There's a different motivation. There's no choice in this, is there? It's going to be beamed to your phone whether you want to or not, or is there a choice?
There is a choice. You can turn off the emergency alerts if you wish, again. So you can go into settings and go to emergency alerts. Just type it in your Android or iPhone, and then you can deselect severe warnings and emergency alerts again. So you can turn it off for whatever reason. Now, a lot of newspapers have picked up that women who are suffering domestic abuse who might have a second phone, that they're worried that maybe they'll be caught out again. But there's so many scenarios there. Well, why would someone have a phone near their abusive partner? But again, so if you're worried about your second phone going off, of course, you can turn it off, then it will not get the message, or you can put it into flight mode. But if you have it on silent and vibrate only, it will sound. So therefore, the only safe way is to turn it off, really, or put into airplane mode if you're worried about someone finding your second phone through this emergency alert.
Yeah, indeed, of course. And there are other reasons why people might have two phones that they don't want to get caught out either. We're going to see this in the Republic of Ireland as well. I think the EU are expecting all countries to have it. The latest I heard from the communications minister is that they're working on it, and we could see something similar in a year or two in the Republic of Ireland as well.
You could. I mean, to me, it benefits the country again, but because in the future, parts of the internet could go down again. So really, it's we don't get severe weather here. And of course, the floodings that we do get here, which destroy homes and everything, but that's gradual again. We generally get the people out on emergency alerts. So we don't have as much. But now that, of course, that the world has changed geopolitically again, that alerts like this could be very, very useful. So I can see all countries going to this because it doesn't cost much, really. And there is no government creep here. They're not gathering information again. Government ministers, cabinet ministers, their partners, their sons, they will also get it again. It's just, to me, it's best practice in modern era.
It's not unusual in countries like America, is it, in terms of, you know, where hurricanes are likely or tornadoes are likely. They've lived with this for an awful long time. And I think it's used as well if there's active shooters in the area. And I think also too in missing persons, exactly, particularly as it relates to children, I think. But certainly the first examples I've given, it's par for the course in many states in America and other countries as well, of course.
It is indeed. And the one you referred to about the missing kids, that's called the Amber Alert, after a young girl, Amber, was kidnapped. So nowadays, whenever a kid goes missing, they try to block off all the routes, given the time that they were missing. And really, it has led to captures again. So that's a wonderful system in case we're missing a kidnapped child again. But
You wouldn't be concerned about the electromagnetic wave that will sweep across Britain and Northern Ireland with all of these phones going off at the same time. But I believe they're always pinging towers anyway, so I don't think this is going to lead to a particular surge, is it?
We're surrounded by electric magnetic.
Literally, I'm sitting here.
Your radio is broadcasting every day to have the country, and that's electric magnetic frequency.
I've got a 5G phone sitting in my front pocket. That's pretty worrying, to be honest with you. Every time someone texts me, but yeah,
I know. I couldn't believe that rubbish about the virus being transmitted through the air again. And by the way, again, your 5G is less dangerous to you than your 4G. If they're going to turn the 5Gs off, they've got to turn the 4Gs off as well. So.
All right, okay. Can we, any views on the I mean, I've never seen so many celebrities and journalists crying about the loss of a blue tick. I know it's not necessarily in the cyber security area, but on actually it kind of is, because I think Elon Musk in removing those ticks has made it more difficult for two-factor authentication, though you can use a third-party app for it. Any views on his moves and what he's doing there?
That's fine. Only a fraction of people actually, which really surprised me, it was about 2% were using a two-factor authentication. But you're right, SMS authentication is not ideal. You know, it's better than nothing. But of course, there's other ways to authenticate. But the blue tick surprised me. Look at Elon has surprised me. The ship hasn't sunk yet. But the one thing he did right from the start, I thought didn't make sense, was removing the blue tick, because we have to have points of reference in our, you know, pillars of the society as well, to be able to see what's going on online, especially now in a generative AI society where things can be fixed so easily. So I never got that move. I believe in other things now. I do think it could be a success, because there is a lot of features being brought in now that you can get on Twitter. But I always thought that was a bad move on his behalf.
What I don't understand too, Kevin, is that, and who am I to question the richest man in the world? But he seems to be very focused on the United States of America. I mean, there are millions of people in African countries, India, elsewhere, that simply could not afford the subscription that he talks of. So he talks about leveling the playing field and sort of taking this privilege from the rich who perhaps could afford to have buy one. But he's excluding so many people in countries that probably need that platform to, you know, fight tyranny or governments or what have you, who simply could not afford the subscription to be able to write longer form messages and to edit them.
You're right. He did try to have, you know, differential pricing throughout the world again, you know, but I mean, it was still a little bit expensive. But look, at the end of the day, he's a business. He's paying large salaries. The salaries of engineers now, you know, are coming, you know, they're 100,000 plus in an American 200. These are incredible wages he has to pay. He has to keep the lights on some way. It's a business. Look, at if there's a better alternative to Twitter, of course, we had Mastodon. Let people move there, you know. So, and again, he's charging now for the API. So he actually is... he's actually making it into a real business. But he's deeper than the vast majority of people. And he cares deeply about the truth. He really has a chip on his shoulder about truth again. And he likes to hear debate. So he's doing things which are actually unprecedented.
But there
in
are
media.
Still, like, I mean, you know, he obviously is labeling media as government funding. And I have no problem with that, actually. I think that's a good thing. But that being said, you know, he is walking a line. Tesla, very heavily funded by governments, not just the American government, but the Chinese government. His SpaceX program, very much tied into it. I don't see any labels above his other companies pointing to the fact that he's receiving all of this funding. And then in the irony of ironies for me, he got away with treating people special and then reintroduced the exact same scheme himself by paying out of his own pocket the likes of William Shatner, LeBron James and Stephen King to have blue ticks. So he's created the same thing he's just got rid of, the thing he didn't want.
Yeah, but he's a bit of a showman. He just is, yeah. He's a maverick in that sense. But you know, and there was a lovely interview with the BBC there lately again, that people saying, you know, the cesspool of Twitter, and he asked for examples of the report.
Oh, he was hung out. That was just catastrophic. It really, really was, that interview.
You've got to bring your A game to an interview with Elon Musk.
You know, and be able to back up what you say. He literally was able to give a perfect live example of everything he says about the mainstream media, that they say stuff without being able to back it up. And it was there evident in that interview. And then the BBC cut that part of the interview out. Which further made his point.
He is incredible. In fact, I'm friends with his ex-wife, Justine Musk.
Yes.
Yeah, so I message her from time to time.
Okay, well, can you get me a blue tick? No, I'm only joking. I don't want one. The one thing I do have in common with Elon Musk, and I only really discovered it recently, is great concerns about artificial intelligence and where we're going in relation to that. And that definitely goes into the realm of cybersecurity, and anyone who has an interest in technology, the speed with which that is developing, and it will develop, is absolutely unbelievable. We are getting emails saying we can write your press releases. It's only a matter of time before there are, you know, AI-generated DJs on Spotify that will be able to target audiences in specific areas with local news and local information. I mean, it's going to change every area of industry really, really quickly, I think, anyway, Kevin. I don't know what you think.
No, the hype is justified in a lot of ways. I try not to be either, you know, saying, no, we're years away, which some people believe, from general AI, which is a worry here, where a machine replicates humans. But this latest, what's happening now in generative AI again with ChatGPT and others again is quite remarkable. It's a language model is dumb, but it come back with amazing answers to you. But it's the code aspect that really got a lot of us computer scientists who don't work in AI necessarily day to day. We were shocked where you can draw a picture in a napkin of the way you'd like your app screen to work and just upload it. And then it'll give you the template, the code, which takes coding.
Yep.
Programming is as complex as it actually is. It really takes years. But this comes back with the code, which we thought a computer could never do that. We always knew computers can do speech to language translation, all other things. But to be able to develop code with a high level pronounced Asian and then say, no, correct that, add another button, remove that button, now can you do this, it's hard to explain to someone non-technical. Then of course the AI, the videos of which are being done now, again, creative AI is superb. My son, when he was 11, was doing this course with Disney remotely through Zoom. This is 11 years ago, and he was about 12 at the time, and everyone else in the class was working for Pixar and Disney, and they were all 20s and 30s, and they were Jose in Brazil and everything else. But my son was precocious in that, but he gave it up because he's seen what was happening with AI. He said, my job will be nothing, because it would take him days to do 2 or 3 seconds of animation.
Yeah.
And he's seen the writing on the wall, and he stopped completely and moved on, and he's been right now. He's shown me stuff that he can't believe, and he understands 3D and animation. And it's just that machine.
Music creation, they created a song using Drake and The Weeknd, and it is a banger if you're into that type of music. Really remarkable. Generated their vocals, generated the lyrics and the music. And I saw someone comment, and I thought it was quite true. Don't blame the AI. Blame the genre. If it's that easy to replicate and to create a decent track, the genre needs to look at itself. You were going to say finally there, Kevin?
Yeah, forgetting about, like, is it the end of the world? You know, really, it's hard to know, because people love the Cassandra complex, talking about a couple, or, you know, the apocalypse and the end of the world, and also the God complex, and thinking that an AGI will take over the world is easy for them to say. But my main worry about it is, and this has to change, there was a professor in the United States who ChatGPT, someone typed into ChatGPT, tell me about any lawsuits against any professors for sexual harassment. ChatGPT came back with the name of this professor, saying he went to Canada to this conference and he was accused of this and this and this. And it was a complete lie. And there were references to articles, and it looked so genuine, like a proper article, or, you know, sourced article. The references, the newspaper articles, were made up by ChatGPT. This guy was libeled forever on the web around the world. And it's happened again in another case in Australia again. So what you have is now, for years, Google and the rest have got away with saying, look, we're only the carriers. We're not the media people. We're not responsible for what people say. And we've largely gone ahead with that. But in the way that we do with a phone call, if someone rings you up on the phone and says, I'm going to murder you, Greg, we don't get all annoyed with BT and ERCOM and say that they're responsible.
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
That's a bit like the internet for news. But now, once they started also removing articles because it was too left-wing or right-wing, because they are left-wing, right, then they actually became newspapers, really, media
publishers, outlets. Yeah, yeah.
But with ChatGPT making up lies like this, I mean, there's going to be loads to
But the problem is there's a race to the bottom, though, because every big company, even Elon Musk, he's just hired in a load of people. You've got Microsoft doing what they're doing. You've got Google. They're rushing it out, and a lot of these problems haven't been ironed out. And then, of course, another case in Germany, a German magazine is being sued by the family of Michael Schumacher because they published, for what reason I don't know, a artificial intelligence created interview with Michael Schumacher, and this is where we're at. All right, Kevin, it's fascinating as always. Could do another hour easily. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
Take care of yourself, and say hello to Mrs. Musk for us. Goodbye. Okay. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now we are speaking to a couple of guests here ahead of a mouthpiece open mic night, which is taking place in the Cottage Bar on Tuesday, the 25th of April, just after the weekend. It's at 7 p.m. It's a monthly night of music, poetry and comedy, which has already picked up a lot of steam in the short while it's been running. We have a couple of guests with us. We're going to be hearing Yuri Zook, I beg your pardon, Yuri Manzouk performing. He's going to be performing on Tuesday night as well, but we'll get to Yuri in a moment. He's just 14 years of age, but supremely talented, I'm told. First, let's say hello to Kaylee Bowery, one of the organisers of the Mouthpiece Open Mic Night. Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Very good, thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Okay, so talk to me about this this concept.
So I was actually approached by a lady called Svetlana Babienka. She had inquired about places to display artwork as part of an exhibition that the Ukrainians were running. Birds Flying High is the title of the exhibition. Her idea was really that it's an exhibition to thank the Irish people for welcoming them into the community. So I took that idea and I approached Stephen Crane, and we discussed maybe creating a night that we could display the artwork as well as maybe including some Ukrainian musicians, and it's just kind of gone from there.
So this runs in any case, and now there is a focus on also bringing in our new Ukrainian neighbours to perform their arts.
That's exactly it, and I have to say, from the moment the idea went out there, we've had a truly warm and welcoming response to the idea. We've been inundated with musicians who want to participate, with artists and volunteers in terms of cooking food. We have a number of prizes that are going to be available for raffle on the night, which have been donated by local artists and sponsored by Amelia's in Letterkenny, Irish Design and Gifts. So we've had a seriously lovely response from this, you know, and that's what the night really is kind of embracing the Ukrainian people. And
right, so how's it set up? You go in on Tuesday night into the Cottage Bar. It's a lovely setting, right? So you take your tables, you just sit around, and then how does the night unfold from there?
Absolutely. Well, it will be the first mouthpiece that will be outside this year, so there'll be plenty of room and hopefully the weather holds out. As you know, the Cottage is a beautiful bar and they're always so open to supporting creative people. So you couldn't really get, again, a more warm and welcoming place to kind of hold this. The exhibition will be starting at 4 o'clock in the evening and running till about 6. We will have a Ukrainian DJ playing in that time. We will have a mix of Irish and Ukrainian food. And then the music will be kicking off at 7 o'clock and it will run on through the evening.
Yes, I know, Yuri, I said I wasn't going to ask you questions, but I kind of want to just ask, how are you? Can you talk to us a little bit about the instrument you're going to be playing for us? Is that no? Okay, that's fine. I don't want to put him on the spot there. He's focused on playing the music, but this is a saxophone, isn't that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And just so Yuri can focus on the music, he is 14 years of age. He'll be forming Let It Bloom, Hollyhocks Bloom. It's by a Ukrainian composer. Do you want to play that for us now? I'll start the music and you can pick it up from there. Okay, this is Yuri.
Thank you.
Well done, Yuri. Well done indeed. Just 14 years of age. He is has just performed Let It Bloom, Hollyhocks Bloom. So there's something different for, and fair play, that's not easy to do, is it?
No, and actually...
Kaylee, to come up and perform with a backing track and wear headphones and all that kind of stuff. So well done, you should be very proud. Go ahead.
Yeah, the evening is always a mix of different creative talents, poetry, you know, we've had opera down there before. It's a wonderful evening that's already so well established, and, you know, congratulations to everyone that's involved in it. It's the best night in the month, genuinely, down in the town.
Yeah, and it's variety, quite literally, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And yeah. And it's all voluntary, you know, it's all people donating their time and their skills and their talents to create an evening of joy and community in the creative arts. So I think that's what's really beautiful about this night. And now we're inviting the Ukrainians to come and be a part of it.
Yeah, fantastic. And we have a wealth of entertainment. And the good thing about different people from different backgrounds, artists are all learning off each other, aren't they? And
100%.
Different influences. And who's to say that we won't see Yuri there performing with, I don't know, a fiddle or something.
Well,
do you know
actually,
what I mean? That's the kind of stuff
that
can happen.
Where yeah. they people meet other creative people and they come together. And that, I mean, we have a couple of acts who are actually playing in two different groups, you know, so it's a lovely kind of just mix and a chance for people to get to know each other. And
then non-creative people like me can just sit there and watch.
Yeah, and enjoy. <Isn't that laughs>
wondering how people are so bloody talented, but it's good to see. So it runs this, the latest one, it's every month. It's in the Cottage Bar, Tuesday the 25th of April at 7 p.m. And all of the artists will be there. How many artists do you generally get to play on any given night?
I mean, we've been in...
It is an open mic, so really...
It is. I mean, there's the opportunity to get up definitely and play or do whatever it is that you do on the night. Generally, there's a kind of schedule because people do message Stephen often and he puts them kind of together in a scheduled system. But it could be up to 10. We have, I think, closer to 15 for this event. So people, again, have really wanted to be involved. They'll get up and do two or three songs or do sort of 10 to 15 minutes a set.
Mm. And is the art exhibition separate or part of this
It will be separate in that it starts at 4 o'clock, but
it's in the same venue.
It's in the same venue.
Excellent.
So it will be part of the same evening, you know, it'll be available to go and view. It will actually be for sale, some of the artwork there as well.
Mm. And did I hear you mention prizes?
Yes.
Talk to me about that again.
So once again, we were sponsored by Francis Spears of Amelia's. We have gifts including work by Audrey Henry, Fiona Herbst, Karen O'Kane, Sheila Dwyer, Siobhan Montgomery. We have Light and Lerve and the Donegal Chocolate Man. You know, this is a real hamper of the best artists locally.
Sounds like a really good, different night out, actually. Not terribly different, but you know what I mean.
It will be
Tuesday
great.
Night.
We also do have Stephen himself as a designer, and we'll have prizes from Stephen's Aulera, his company, Bougainvillea Visual Arts, and we have Without Willow as well, who have signed a CD for us. So, I mean, it's going to be a great night for prizes, which pays for the evening now. Usually it's voluntary, but we are hoping this one to make it a bit special and give a little bit to everyone.
Brilliant stuff, Kaylee. Thank you. Yuri, are you okay now?
Yes.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes.
Okay, and you're performing on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Okay. Well, it's a man of few words but immense talent. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for joining us. Some say I perhaps speak too much, so if I could get somewhere in between me and Yuri, we might get a perfect person. Okay. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Yuri Mandzyuk, who is living here now. His father still remains in Ukraine, but is here with his mother and siblings. And of course, Kaylee Bowery, one of the organisers of the Mouthpiece Open Night, Open Mic Night in Letterkenny. Just to remind you once again, it is on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. It's in the Cottage Bar. The music starts and the performances start at 7 p.m, but there is an art exhibition on the same site from 4 p.m.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for something different to do on a Tuesday evening, then why not? We were speaking a little earlier on about Elon Musk and his role in Twitter and what have you, but he also has a company called SpaceX. And yesterday, he attempted to blast the biggest rocket, his Starship, into orbit. It didn't quite work out, I suppose, from our perspective, but I believe from his perspective and the team's perspective, an awful lot was learned and a lot was achieved. Let's see what David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, thinks about all of this. You like to look up at the stars, David. Elon Musk wants to go and live on them, I think. But as I say, to the casual onlooker, it seemed not a success. But to them, they got a lot of data and they seem quite confident going forward.
Yes, it's the way space exploration goes. You build this new, you have a launch before giant rocket, light the blue touch paper, as it were, and retire. It would have been great had it gone up into almost into orbit, certainly over 200 kilometers above the Earth's surface, and splashed down around Hawaii, actually, almost either side of the Earth to where it was launched from Texas. But it wasn't to be a success. The important thing was that this monster rocket, the biggest one we've ever built, with 39 engines in the base of it, it almost seems ridiculous on paper. It did actually launch, I think it was 24 miles, about 40 kilometers above the ground, which is a great success to launch something that big. But unfortunately, it looks like some of the engines failed and it didn't achieve separation of the next stage, which would have led to the Starship, the piece that wants to carry astronauts to actually go into orbit. So a success in some regards in that, you know, it got 40 kilometers off the ground, but a bit of a disappointment, didn't achieve its full mission.
Yeah, and he has a different strategy in that relatively low-cost build, but also that they are fully reusable, and that would have been the aim, that the actual rocket that got it up as far as it did would return to Earth and be able to be reused again, as would the ship itself. And they seem confident that they're able to go again in another couple of months, for what it's worth.
Yep, he's already said he's planning the next launch within a few months, and the scale of this particular project is almost ridiculous. It's almost Bond villain-esque. Musk plans to launch several of these per day to get people to Mars. And something Jeff Bezos appeared in public on stage saying that they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. Now, there hasn't been anybody on Mars or even in orbit about Mars. In fact, nobody's even been around the moon in over 50 years. So to say something like that would be considered crazy if it weren't for the fact they were the two richest men in the world, and they've both got space companies, and they are literally putting their money where their mouth is. So when he has a major engineering success like this to get it off the ground, and you know his early rockets exploded as well, now they're bringing in great revenue, launching rockets for internet constellation of satellites and lots of other customers as well. So I'm sure this isn't a major setback. It would have been nice had it worked 100%, but it got off the ground. They're building more, and they're going to have several of these per day. I mean, if people know Liberty Hall, one of the tallest buildings in Dublin, this rocket is way over twice the height of that building.
Yeah. It's only when you see a person standing beside it that you actually see the scale. And a quick one, I don't know if Caroline mentioned this to you, but I'm sure, quite an interesting and rare eclipse event. I think a lot of people in Australia were able to view it, David. I presume you kept an eye on that too?
Yes, unfortunately no part of it at all was visible from Ireland. We will have a bit of eclipse later this year, partially visible from Ireland. But there hasn't been a total eclipse of the sun on this island since 1724, and there won't be another one till the year 2090. So if you want to see one, you have to travel. And this one was unusual in that the moon just happens to be exactly the right distance from the Earth to fit perfectly over the sun. It's scary, and sometimes a bit too far away, and the moon doesn't quite cover the sun. You get what's called an annular eclipse. And this one was just on the border of those. It's called a hybrid eclipse. Part of it, the moon was just close enough to totally cover the sun. From other parts in the Pacific and Indian Ocean, it wasn't. So people gathered northwest Australia actually got to see the total eclipse, but a very short one at that. There's a big one coming actually in Mexico next year. We've had trips to solar eclipses before. If people want to come on to Mexico and watch our social media, we have a travel company organising the details as we speak.
Now, David, I have to go, but I don't think any conversation with you would be complete if you didn't tell me about the frequency of your magazine and how people can subscribe to it.
Yeah, we're always looking for members who are fascinated by this topic. Beginners, we have a monthly magazine called Astronomy Ireland that will tell you all about what to see in Irish skies, what people have been seeing. A special member's email every week to keep you up to date as well, and we're trying to promote interest in astronomy. So if you can spare about €1 a week on your hobby, do join Astronomy Ireland. All the details are on astronomy.ie. And a quick tip, this Saturday and Sunday, look at the moon. As soon as it gets dark in the early evening, you'll see the planet Venus is near it on Saturday night and Sunday night. In fact, we're setting up telescopes in the Dublin area on Saturday to look at Venus and the moon up close in detail. So more details on astronomy.ie.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, David Moore. Now, that line wasn't great. I can assure you it's Venus that will be close to the moon over the weekend. Okay, a caller says, if you have a dual SIM and a UK number in Donegal, will we get the alert? I think it is if you are in earshot, so to speak, of the transmitters in Britain and Northern Ireland. Rather than your SIM, and I might have said something misleading, I think if you get your signal from a transmitter, it's the transmitter that's sending them out blanket-wise. So if your phone's connected to a Northern Irish transmitter, then you are going to get this warning. So 85 million phones connected at once. That's quite the electromagnetic wave being sent out at once. As I say, they're always pinging off the cell towers, aren't they? So your guest is allowed to say, my views are rubbish. Interesting, I guess, that it's also free speech. I'm not offended yet if I made that comment the opposite way around. Do you believe what Professor Kevin Corrin was saying is rubbish? That's perfectly fine. You're not going to be limited here. He wasn't actually addressing anyone's particular views, but obviously they are the views that you hold. But you clearly believe what he says in calling your views rubbish. You believe they are rubbish. And I've said it there for you on the same programme around about the same time, and I've said it myself. So hopefully you feel that your free speech has been protected as he does feel his is.